What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Christian Sager. Today, we're going to talk about even more ways that humans have devised to kill one another. In fact, I think this is one of the most creative ways I've ever heard of.
Yeah, and we're talking about weapons here. A crazy weaponized scheme that, as we'll discuss, ultimately doesn't really hold any water. But it just shows to what extent we'll think about what are our greatest technological achievements, and then how can we use those as a grandiose means to rain death on our enemies.
And I we'll get into it, but I can sort of understand the justification for guys sitting around a room trying to come up with all these grisly ways to destroy one another. Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, though, I want to remind our audience that we are periscoping every week now. So we did our first episode last week as of this recording, and we are going to be doing it every Friday at noon. You can find us at Blow the Mind on Periscope and Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr. All those platforms will be letting people know when we're periscoping, giving you a little bit of a preview of what we're going to be doing that week. I think this week coming up, which will be in the past for our listeners, we're going to be talking about our favorite horror films and perhaps some of our favorite gateway drug horror literature.
Yeah, for Halloween. And certainly as we go forward with it, you know, we're having some fun with it. It's very loose, very free form, very mm-hmm. casual. We're just shooting the breeze about some stuff that we're into, both on-topic Stuff to Blow Your Mind material and sort of the sort of jibber-jabber on the side.
Last time we shot from within the podcast studio, we'll hopefully be able to talk to you about what we've recorded this week, what we're recording next week.
It's behind-the-scenes stuff, get-to-know-us stuff. So check it out if that's your thing.
And in addition to that, we have heard, and this may or may not be true, but we've heard that if your iTunes reviews are, if you have a large quantity of them, and obviously I would assume if they're positive, that it helps your rankings in iTunes for other people to discover your show. So if you listen to us on iTunes, if you have time, leave us a review and help that algorithm out. And also, we just found out yesterday that we are now available on Google Play as well. So if you're using an Android device or something else, I believe you can download or stream right through Google Play now.
Yeah, yeah, it's exciting. Another great way to check out the your favorite episodes.
So let's get into the meat of this episode, though, which is something that's referred to as Rods from God. And I know that sounds like a horrible title for a pornography film, but it is actually a space weapons system that has been devised and has not actually been built, to my knowledge.
No.
But the idea is basically as simple as this. Space is already weaponized, okay? So we know, like, the Corona was launched in the early 1960s as the U.S.'s first spy satellite so they could gather information on the Soviets and their military arsenal. Global positioning system, the GPS that we use in our cars and on our phones, that was originally designed to offer navigation and timing for the U.S. military. So the idea here is that because space is becoming an area that is getting weaponized not only by the U.S. but by other large nations like, you know, former Soviet Union. We'll talk about China in a second. These military teams are actually assigning the goal of trying to find out other ways of developing technology for both range and accuracy from space in the same way that they did for land, sea, and air. So space is becoming a war zone and weaponized, right? And that's where Rods from God came from.
Yeah, a.k.a. Project Thor, or this is the more technical title that I like, Hypervelocity Rod Bundles. Not to be confused with pro wrestler Rod Hypervelocity Bundle, who I couldn't help but create in my own head when I was reading this. But Hypervelocity Rod Bundle. And it all comes down to just this single stupendous idea.
Uh-huh.
As a superpower, I have the ability to put things into orbit and then bring them back down again, which is just godlike in
yep.
terms of human technology. So godlike is this power that I don't even need to use a weapon, theoretically. I could just put some tungsten up there. I could put some steel up there and then just drop it on you. And its reentry velocity would be enough to take out an enemy encampment, to dig down into a bunker and blast that out. Doesn't even need any explosives or munitions, just a
right.
big beam of steel.
We're literally talking about telephone pole-sized bars of tungsten, or the other one that was proposed is uranium, and I'll get into that in a minute, but that you just drop.
Handing a bus to Godzilla
yeah.
and getting him to throw it at someone.
Well, one of the alternatives you wrote was death pennies from heaven. I mean, the idea here is essentially the same principle as that old urban myth of, you know, you throw a penny off the Empire State Building and it kills somebody, right? So it's the same kind of principle here, that the idea being that they would take two satellites, they'd mm-hmm. launch them into orbit, these two would work together several hundred miles above Earth. One of them is for targeting and communications back to the ground. The other one carries a bundle of 20-foot-long tungsten rods that are 1 foot in diameter. So these are pretty big. Between the time that somebody on the ground says, drop the rods, it takes 15 minutes for them to hit their target. They fall at a speed of 36,000 feet per second. And when they hit, they have the same destructive force as a meteor strike. So that's
yeah.
essentially what we're talking about here. The math goes like this. The energy is greater the higher the orbit that you drop them from, right? But so is the fall time. So in order to get the energy, the same energy of like a high explosive munitions, you would need a material speed of 3 kilometers per second. And to do that, you have to at least get up to an altitude of 460 kilometers. This corresponds roughly to about 12 minutes falling time. And then I think they probably added another 3 minutes for, you know, I'm assuming communications and mechanics of the,
right.
the technology and such. But that's how this idea works. You're literally dropping telephone poles of metal on people, on your targets. And it just hits so hard that it will supposedly just create this incredible explosive impact, digging down into the earth, right?
And
like you said, the idea here is that if somebody like your, you know, Osama bin Laden style target is in a deep underground bunker, this is the way that you get them without radiating the entire land around them.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to that. It's very reminiscent of the myth of the penny off the top of the Empire State Building, which, again, as you pointed out, wouldn't kill anybody. It's only a gram. It tumbles as it falls, so there's too much air resistance for it to do any damage. But even still, if you were to throw a 50-gram nut off the Empire State Building, a roll of pennies, which is certainly more like a rod, a bullet, now you're talking, that could actually kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the basic idea here, is just an epic death pennies from heaven kind of scenario.
And the other, so I mentioned uranium. So the tungsten and uranium were the two materials that were specifically listed.
Mm-hmm.
I originally wrote about this on our a sister site for How Stuff Works called Stuff of Genius. And one of the readers there actually suggested that titanium would be better. And I don't have any inkling about material sciences, so you know, I'd love to hear from the listeners on what they think on this, but they were saying that basically tungsten is flammable, so of course it's going to burn up on reentry, which we'll talk about later, and uranium is radioactive.
Yeah.
So it seems to defeat the purpose, because the gist here is that you want to have the same explosive impact as a nuclear weapon without leaving behind radiation.
Right. And essentially having that kind of high-powered explosive weapon without actually having to use explosives.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about guys sitting around thinking up ridiculous high-tech ways to dish out some death.
Yeah.
Who thought this one up?
So this is a guy named Jerry Pournelle, and you out there may be familiar with him because he's primarily known as a science fiction author.
I was going to say, that's his name rang a bell from past sci-fi section perusals.
Yeah, so Pournelle, he's an engineer, he's a science writer, he's primarily known for science fiction. He has degrees in experimental statistics, systems engineering, psychology, and political science. He worked for Boeing in the 1960s, and the idea was that he was going to help develop the aerospace industry. But this is where he came up the idea with dropping metal from outer space to kill people. I don't know if that was, you know, on his action item list from a meeting or something, but this is where it came up. So the idea is a kinetic energy weapon. That's kind of the term that's used for these style weapons. It's been around since something called the RAND Corporation proposed placing rods on the tips of ICBMs way back in the 1950s. And we'll get back into that later, because that seems to actually be the more plausible method of kinetic energy deployment.
Yeah, attaching it to the front of an intercontinental ballistic missile.
A little bit more about Jerry Pournelle I want to get into, though, before we get into to the rest of the science behind Rods of God. So he's, like I said, he's best known as a sci-fi novelist. I haven't read any of his books, but I'm really curious about them. He maintains a pretty active blog. He attracted attention from politicians in the 80s. Ronald Reagan actually applauded a tract that he wrote that was called Mutually Assured Survival, a Space Age Solution to Nuclear Annihilation. And then he and Newt Gingrich actually teamed up and worked together on a novel that is so far unpublished. I want to read this, though. It's called The Faction, and here's the premise. The Yakuza work together with big corporations to overthrow the government. And the way that they do it is by using kinetic kill-type weapons. They use rods from God. So he's repurposed his own idea for this novel that he's working on with Newt Gingrich. Unfortunately, he suffered a stroke in 2014. He's still writing. My understanding is that he's still active, but not as much as he used to be.
By the way, I have not read this, but apparently he wrote the novelization of the movie Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Really?
In 1973, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which, is that the one that has a nuke in it as a central theme? Is that the one with the cool underground stuff?
I always get them mixed up. I believe that's later.
That's beneath.
Isn't Escape from Planet of the Apes the one where they go back in time and they actually, two apes come to present day America and they end up, trying to convince, like, Congress or something like that they shouldn't, proceed with war?
Yeah, I timed out before they really got to that point in my viewing. This one would be the third. I have just looked it up.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
The first one is Planet of the Apes as we know and love it. Second one is Beneath the Planet of the Apes, is few of us know and love, but I love it because mm-hmm. it has those more Lockean creatures that live underground and worship the bomb. This would have been the third one. He wrote the novelization.
Yeah. So keep in mind that the guy who came up with this idea and that the U.S. government has actively worked on, and also the weapons industry has actively worked on, also happened to work on the Planet of the Apes franchise.
There you go.
And so in particular, in the last decade alone, there have been two big reports that are public and have been written about this. The first was in 2003, and it was the U.S. Air Force's Transformation Flight Plan. And then in 2002, that RAND Corporation again, they wrote a report called Space Weapons Earth Wars, which we're probably going to reference a lot in this because we read it for the podcast.
And I'll link to some of these resources on the landing page for this episode, at least the ones that are easily accessed by everyone.
So this is a concept that people are taking seriously. They're doing the math. They're doing the science. They're trying to figure out, can we drop these telephone poles on our enemies and destroy them without irradiating them? And there's one other benefit to this, too. The other benefit is that weapons like this wouldn't technically violate the 1972 Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty.
Ah.
So if you put them up and you were dropping them in the way that we've described, I think you could, you know, work your way around that.
Now, I want to point out that just as this relates nicely to dropping pennies off the Empire State Building, there have been a number of missile weapons that achieve the same ends, though on a smaller scale. You know, make a payload go up, bring it back down. As for achieving enough altitude that the descent speed weaponizes the payload, well, we have a couple of interesting examples from the 20th century. In World War I, that you saw airdropped Fletchets, which were essentially just look like metal arrowheads that are dropped out. Same idea. So you drop them from an airplane, they're going to achieve enough velocity to do some damage when they hit.
Those are the things that the X-Men Archangel shoots out of his wings.
Ah, yeah.
Metal Fletchets.
Fletchets. Yeah, I feel like the Fletchettes show up as a munition and various sci-fi properties as well. Like, I think Gibson deployed them in Neuromancer.
Like the idea of using them as kinetic like rail guns or something like that is popular.
Because, again, the idea is if it's moving fast enough, there's enough kinetic energy, you don't need explosive energy. Additionally, there's something called lazy dog bombs, and these were developed in World War II and deployed in Vietnam and Korean Wars, sometimes called buzz bombs, sometimes called lawn darts, because essentially that's what you're talking about, a bunch of small, unguided kinetic projectiles. They're not technically bombs. Often they're dropped in clusters, sometimes from mounted casings underneath the wing of an airplane, other times supposedly just hurled out in a bucket. You know, very, very loose, very, hey, we're up here just by virtue of being in the air at a certain altitude.
Yeah.
We have the kinetic advantage by throwing these things out. So the idea itself, pretty simple, but when you take it up to an orbital level, that's where you get some real, essentially cosmic destructive possibilities.
Yeah, and so this kind of reminds me, I know this is like an actual explosive munition, at least is my understanding, but around the time of the beginning of the war in Iraq, there was a lot of attention being paid to the Daisy Cutter. Do you remember that? It was a specific kind of like bunker buster type weapon. And I think the attraction was that like it was so incredibly powerful that it could defeat our enemies, and yet it wasn't as horrific as like the nuclear bomb, right?
Yeah. This is the shock and awe thing.
Exactly, yeah, shock and awe. So I think this is the same sort of principle, although it's kinetic and not explosive. And I do want to take a second here to as an aside, these are different from what you may have heard about in the news lately, being referred to as anti-ship ballistic missiles, or ASBMs. They were something that the U.S. actually tested in the 1960s and had two successful flights with. The Soviet Union developed them in the past. But more recently, in January of 2014, China conducted a test of a hypersonic glide vehicle that was designed to carry missiles designed to sink aircraft carriers. This thing flies at Mach 10. It isn't the first time that they've developed an ASBM, but it's thought to be like the second stage of their program, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that it's very similar to this. It launches an ICBM up into outer space and then sends that back down at Mach 10. So there's no satellite up there. It just launches it up and brings it back down. And the idea is that one of these things would hit an aircraft carrier and just completely take it out. And that They move, I think the idea here is like that they move so quickly, faster than actual like traditional munitions, that they're difficult for anti-air defenses to take down. So there's some concern about that.
Okay.
But this is not the same
thing. Not the same thing at
no.
all. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to get into the feasibility of rods from gods. And this is where it gets a little more fun and ultimately where everything falls apart. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, we're back.
Yeah, so let's talk about how feasible rods from God actually are. It's nice, a bunch of guys sitting around in a room smoking cigars, mm-hmm. talking about sci-fi ideas on how they could kill each other. Let's get down to the nuts and bolts of this thing. So first of all, there's some scientific reasons why it wouldn't work. One is vaporization.
Yeah.
So
the thing that we see with meteorites, right?
Mm-hmm.
Entering the Earth's atmosphere.
So even a giant tungsten rod would probably vaporize on impact. There's been some ideas that, like, you could attach retro rockets to each one of the rods that would slow their reentry slightly. Mm-hmm. But the calculations basically say that if you did that, the non-explosive rod would then be no more effective than the conventional munitions that we already have at our disposal.
Yeah, and you're kind of betraying the spirit of the thing, right? Because the whole idea is I have all this technology and I can use it to just straight up drop a big chunk of metal on you.
Mm-hmm.
If we're putting rockets on that, then we're kind of getting back into the area of just creating a space missile.
Yeah, and it's going to be more expensive,
yeah,
too, which is another drawback. The physics just wouldn't work. A high-velocity impact would limit the actual penetration depth. So remember, like, you know, part of the idea behind this is to bust bunkers, right, to get those underground, you know, headquarters, I guess, that are usually unreachable. If you look at high-speed photography of a bullet impacting steel at 1 kilometer a second, and remember, to achieve the rod from God, impact, you have to hit 3 kilometers per second. But just at 1 kilometer a second, apparently the jacket fragments right off of the bullet and leaves a small crater on the steel that it strikes. So the idea here is that, like, there would be probably a similar effect on a larger scale, that the rods would shatter, vaporize, they might leave a little bit of a crater, but for the most part it wouldn't have the explosive impact that they're looking for. In fact, the Sandia Laboratory, which I didn't know about until doing this research, it's a national security nuclear weapons testing facility. They've actually confirmed predictions about this, looking that even the hardest materials will max out their penetration capabilities at 1 kilometer per second. So you go any faster than that, the tip of the rod will probably liquefy. It will cause the penetration depth to fall off. And then you get this situation where even if they're delivered from low altitudes, they would only deliver 1/9 of the destructive energy per gram force as a conventional bomb.
Yeah, so again, what's the point of that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're totally losing the spirit of our beautiful death-dealing device.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah. And also, keep in mind, too, that even if the entire rod doesn't vaporize, the tip would probably deform or something like that, which would change their flight path considerably, and you end up striking a nearby town or something rather than the bunker that you're trying to strike.
Yeah, because each rod would need to follow a precise, nearly vertical flight path in order to reach its target. Again, assuming you don't have any kind of thrusters on there that are turning into a missile, more of a guided missile anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's difficult enough to figure this out without factoring in a rod that's partially disintegrated or warped due to all this reentry friction.
Yeah, and so this is the thing, like, for me, like, again, not knowing a lot about material science, I'm wondering why tungsten is the metal that they chose for the proposal, given that it's flammable and it's, you know, going to be, just on reentry alone, probably going to catch on fire. So I'm not quite sure. There must be a reason, though, I would think. Or maybe it's literally just like a sci-fi novel pitch and just ran with it. So actually, to get to the actual proposal, in that RAND Corporation, Space Weapons Earth Wars, the authors suggest that one way that they could address this is by, quote, extruding material through pores in the nose tip of the rod for evaporation. Another option they pitch is ablative cooling, where the outer layer would be designed to melt away on purpose. But again, then you get that thing where the nose potentially deforms, and then it's just completely unpredictable where this thing's going to hit.
Yeah, we just see it time and time again here with just the basic physical design. It sounds like it'll be a simple procedure, a simple design, but you have to tweak it. It's like, all right, we got to put thrusters on it. The tip needs to ooze, and it needs to be reflective, and.
Right.
And what next? It needs a crew?
All this stuff essentially makes it untenable.
Yeah.
Not to mention that there's something called the absentee ratio for the satellites that are circling around in orbit carrying all these rods. So because satellites circle the planet every 100 minutes, they won't always be in position to hit their target. So yeah, remember that whole thing like, oh yeah, you just call up from the ground 15 minutes later, boom,
yeah.
Right? But no.
Unless it's on the other side of the globe.
Exactly. You've got to wait for it to actually be in position to hit the target. And satellites, as we have them right now, can't really change their speeds that easily or maneuver around in orbit because there's no atmosphere. So they might not even work because of this.
Yeah.
And then, there's also the whole idea of, like, if you're up in orbit, again, like, you have to break the atmosphere for reentry. So you need some kind of thrust, too.
Yeah, that's one thing that's important to keep in mind is that, yes, you have to use all of this energy and effort to get something into orbit, but then you also have to use energy and effort to get it out of orbit.
Yeah.
At least to get it out of orbit along the timeline that you're looking at to weaponize the thing.
Yeah, and the satellites as well. Here's another just like whole reason why this isn't feasible. The satellites would probably be vulnerable to ground-based attacks, right? So, let's say China puts one of these up in orbit and it's floating around up there. We're going to be able to detect that, and we'll probably be able to shoot it down.
Yeah, we've been able to bust satellites for a while, so that's not even an issue.
Yeah. So then to improve efficiency there, they'd have to launch even more satellites, which costs even more money, and these things are not cheap. They're crazy expensive. So, okay, how expensive is it? So we know from NASA that it costs $10,000 per pound to put something into orbit, no matter what the object is, right? So somebody actually broke down the math, and I brought it here for us today. If one of these rods weighed 0.1 tons and there were 3 tons of propellant on it to stop its orbital motion, basically to give it the thrust to get through.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just going to continue to orbit.
Yeah. That means that launching one rod would cost $30 million.
Wow.
And you need at least 10 rods per satellite. So this is just insanely expensive. And like we said, there's just, you know, a lot of feasibility issues science-wise, strategic-wise, and then it's just incredibly expensive.
Yeah, it costs a ton of money, and you're ultimately going to have to do so many things to it. You're going to have to turn that rod into a guided missile anyway to make it work. Mm-hmm. So why not just use a guided missile?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's one of the proposed solutions, right? To just use an ICBM instead.
Yeah, and ultimately it goes all the way back to that 1950s RAND proposal. So the idea there was that they would attach the rods to intercontinental ballistic missiles. These are the ICBMs that, you know, only a few nations actually have access to that can launch missiles around the world. The downside is that these could be detected a lot easier. So I was saying earlier about how, like, the kinetic drop, makes it so that they're so fast that it's a lot harder for them to be detected by anti-air defenses. So here's some more math for you. To get the 1 kilometer per second speed that would be needed, an acceleration of 30 times that of gravity. So this is something that a nominal solid rocket motor could probably provide. It would take 3.3 seconds over a distance of 1.65 kilometers. So that actually doesn't sound like all that much, right?
Right.
Especially compared to what we've just been talking about with dropping these telephone poles. But this would only cost us $100,000 or less, plus the cost of a terminal guidance system. I don't know how much those run for nowadays, where it's like an iPhone.
Yeah, I think it's an Xbox One.
Yeah. So it's cheaper. Sounds like it would probably work better. I think the disadvantage is the speed factor, and then also that it's not coming downward exactly. It's coming at an angle, right? So that possibly would lead to less penetration. I'm not quite sure. But the other proposal from that Space Weapons Earth Wars proposal, I would love to just be a fly on the wall for the writing process of that, like the people sitting around just putting that together for the RAND Corporation.
Yeah, there are no bad ideas in brainstorming space weapons.
Yeah. So their idea is to try conventional ordnance that's delivered from space.
So basically just space bombing.
Yeah, yeah. Space rockets.
Yeah.
So the idea here is that they would have the direct destructive force, but it would be outward instead of downward, like I was talking about earlier. They'd be slower, but they wouldn't erode. And they would require explosives and fusings. And here's the problem with that they'd have to survive the impact, right? Mm-hmm. But then they'd also have to be able to determine their depth penetration before they exploded.
Getting back to that bunker busting.
Exactly, yeah. The idea is that these got to drill underground. So, and again, they're more susceptible to terminal defenses than kinetic weapons would be.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99.
get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So when you put it all together, rods from the gods, Operation Thor, whatever you want to call it, kinetic strike force rods, kinetic strike force rod bundles. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's such a captivating idea. And again, I think it comes down to just the idea that our technological advancement could be such, right, our power could be such, that it would be akin to having a slingshot. Like, right, the mm-hmm. slingshot is the technology. The thing that goes in the slingshot needs to be nothing more than a pebble.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the attraction here is like, we're just harnessing the physics of the universe,
yeah,
essentially, right?
And
without having to build the specific devices designed to kill. I mean, it is, but you know what I mean? Like, you could put other things up there too and drop them and they would kill people as well. It's just they wouldn't be able to do it with precision and range.
Yeah, I mean, statues of Walt Disney, you name it, giant Oscars. I guess I'm thinking of statues for some reason.
Just lots of statues. A statue of Lenin, a statue of Darth Vader.
There's something kind of nicely space opera about that. I can imagine Ming the Merciless using rods from God, mm-hmm, and each rod is just a statue of Ming.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, actually, because this idea, having come from a sci-fi writer, has actually worked its way into a lot of our popular fiction. two I can think of. I first heard about this reading the Warren Ellis comic Global Frequency, which was adapted into a television show. So he had clearly read about it somewhere and decided to incorporate it as like a terrorist group had access to one of these. Mm-hmm. The other one, I believe the second G.I. Joe live action movie, was that they were going to use kinetic weapons to destroy something.
I saw that on the airplane going to or from China, so I was pretty distracted at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was some sort of rods from God thing.
I think so, yeah. And I'm sure there's others. Joe brought up something. I was talking to him about this before we went to the studio, and he said that he thinks that in the Mass Effect games and universe that there's like a similar kinetic velocity kind of idea behind a lot of the weapons, not just like ship-to-ship weapons, but also the like guns that characters carry.
Like mass driving weapons.
I think so, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, the idea is really cool. It's fun for stories, but it doesn't seem like it's going to work until we spend more than a couple $1 million to put these things in outer space and then drop them and see what happens.
All right, so there you have it, rods from God. You know, we got a little time here. Let's call over the robot and see if we have a little listener mail. Whoa, and the robot is sounding a little more satanic than usual, I have to say.
Is it Carney or Arnie this time? I can never remember when he's possessed by the devil.
I don't know. It's Carney, but with sixes in there somehow. Oh. I don't know. He spells it really weird. But yes, it looks like we've received a couple of new listener mails regarding our Satanic Panic episode, which was the first episode that we did together.
Yeah.
This one comes to us from Katie. Katie writes in and says, "So first off, I adore your podcast. Discovered it a few months back, and it's been a wave to keep my mind from atrophying at my mind-numbingly boring job as an overnight grocery stocker. I listen to the new episodes as they come out and have been slowly working my way back through the rest of them. My coworker hates me because I always stop midway through the work, take my earphones out, and insist on educating him on topics he has absolutely no interest in. Luckily, family members and roommates are much more accepting of my need to tell people of my newfound knowledge." So Katie goes on to mention that she just listened to the Satanic Panic episode, and she shares some personal family stuff here, which I'm not going to get into the details here, just because I'm not certain she would want to share with everyone, and some of the details are probably a little bit too much for the average listener. But she continues in the email and says, "So obviously when I first heard word that this whole satanic panic thing was most likely mass hysteria, I was personally offended by it. I didn't want to think that someone I cared about could have had such a big part of her life based on something entirely fake. Mm. I honestly skimmed the article that first brought it to my attention, got angry, and closed it and never went back. When I started your Satanic Panic episode, I had a moment of thinking I should just skip it once I realized it was what it was going to be about. But at this point, you guys had kind of totally won me over, so I decided to give it a shot."
Oh, that's
And
nice.
There was one line in there, just a throwaway line, where you guys acknowledged that while there most likely wasn't some huge satanic craze in the 70s, that there were still some people who were suffering horrific abuse. Hearing that kind of wiped out my whole personal offense at the topic, and I was able to enjoy an incredibly interesting podcast. I honestly really like stories about mass hysterias, and this was definitely an incredibly fascinating one, more so when I could put aside my personal feelings and consider it in relation to my story." So thank you, Katie, for writing in.
I really appreciate listener mail in general, but this in particular, you know, thank you, Katie, for sharing your personal story with us, but also for letting us know that, you know, this is something that you weren't inclined to want to listen to, but that because, you know, you trusted us as hosts, I'm assuming you went ahead, followed us on the journey, and we're happy that, you know, you learned what you did afterwards.
Yeah, and I guess I have two thoughts on all of that. First of all, that's one of the things that's so fascinating and disturbing about the Satanic Panic scenario is that there is just pure fantasy and pure fiction and mass hysteria, but the pain that spiraled out from it is and was real.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I said that during the episode that, like, I may not believe their stories, but I believe that they believe in them.
Yeah.
And that's real enough to them that it, you know, requires us to be sympathetic as, you know, emotional human beings to the things that happen to them. And also, I think it's important, you know, we try to do this with every episode and with whatever we're talking about, whether it's Satanic Panic or dropping giant metal telephone poles from outer space. there's more than one side to every story, right? And so, obviously, like, you have to keep that in mind. You want to also be open to the possibilities of whatever, you know, somebody else's perspective, whether it's subjective or not. And in the Satanic Panic situation, there were hundreds of incidents. So we're never going to know all the stories, you know. We're never going to know how things all matched up with one another. But, you know, by and large, I think we covered the hysteria part, the mass media part of it fairly well.
Yeah, and I also like how Katie talked about how when she first heard about the mass hysteria aspects of Satanic Panic, that she was offended, that she was turned off, and then she ended up coming back to it. And I always think about that a lot when we're engaging with listeners, particularly on social media, because there's always going to be somebody who has a reaction to some sort of article or study or material, and they're kind of defensive about it. Maybe they're a little up in arms. And I often think back to times in my own life where I've come across some new way of looking at the world. And a lot of times there is this gut reaction. There's something that challenges your personal history, challenges your ideology, and there's the reflex is to put the guards up.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It takes some time sometimes to come back around and open yourself up to this idea and put yourself in a state of open-minded vulnerability to consider it.
I think that gets down to the ethos of this show overall for Joe, Robert, and I, is that, like, the overall quality that I'm shooting for with every episode is that we're trying to connect to that wonder of looking at the world and going, oh wow, I didn't know that, you know, and then thinking about the thing that you go, oh wow, at, and kind of criticizing it. Like, yeah, oh wow, it'd be really cool if you could drop metal from outer space and destroy your enemies, right? Like, that's like a thing that a 5-year-old does in the sandbox, like playing with their toys, right?
Right.
But at the same time, like, you kind of step back and you look at the science of it and you go, huh, well, that's a wonderful idea. Probably not feasible. Probably doesn't work. But look at our human imagination working at this. Or look at the wonder of science that we could even begin thinking about it.
All right. Well, what does the robot have there? Looks like he has another one.
Another one's coming out here. Hold on. This is from Hannah, and she writes in to let us know that she's a longtime listener and that she had some thoughts that she would also like to share on the Satanic Panic episode. It turns out that I'm going to read this verbatim. The first is in response to your Satanic Panic episode. Robert and Christian mentioned how some teenagers may have explored Satanism to shock the authority figures in their life and find a sense of individualism. And it reminded me of a song by folk rock band The Mountain Goats. I'm vaguely familiar with The Mountain Goats. I don't listen to them a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, I have some friends who are real big fans.
So they have a song apparently that's called The Best Ever Death Metal Band in Denton. I like the title. We're going to have to listen to it. Tells the story of childhood friends Jeff and Cyrus and how their dream of becoming a famous death metal band was dashed by the adults in their lives. But all hope is not lost, says Hannah. The song ends by saying, quote, the best ever death metal band out of Denton will in time both outpace and outlive you, followed by a couple of rousing Hail Satans. In this, the Hail Satans are not so much an actual hailing of Satans, but more of a beep to the people that told them to.
Okay.
I kind of like that idea. I guess I'll add on to this, Hannah, that I'm a big fan of the band Ghost, which is they're associated with metal, but I think they're more of kind of like a hard rock band. But the premise behind the band is that they're supposedly Satanists, and all the leader of the band is a guy called Papa Emeritus, who dresses up like an anti-pope with like an upside down cross and skull
paint.
Oh
yeah, yes, yes. Yeah, I've seen plenty of pictures.
Yeah. I mean, so it's all theatrical. It's all ridiculous. The lyrics to the songs are supposedly about summoning Satan and, you know, worshiping him and all these things. Honestly, it's a big circus performance. That's what I love out of it. I love the theatricality. That appeals to me. So I can see why this song would kind of do the same thing. It sounds to me like this Mountain Goat song might be about a proto version of Ghost.
Nice. All right. Well, there you have it. Hey, you want to reach out to us? You want to see what we're up to? You want to explore some of these past episodes? See what's coming up? Head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's the mothership. That's where you'll find all the podcast episodes, all the videos, various blog posts, links out to these social media accounts like Facebook and Twitter, We're Blow the Mind on both of those, and Tumblr, where we're Stuff to Blow Your Mind.
Yeah, and don't forget, we're going to be on Periscope every Friday at noon, and you can interact with us directly on there. Last time, people were able to ask us questions right through the app, and we were able to talk right back to them, talk about things like Melt movies. Some people gave us suggestions for new episodes, like one on strange weather, which sounded like it would be kind of fun to me. And you can listen to us talk about our favorite horror movies, and maybe even some horror literature as well. Things that we probably talk about casually on the show, but aren't usually the themes of the show.
Yeah. And hey, maybe one of these days we'll spend, the Periscope session, for Joe to finally cook those, use that recipe for cookies that he found in the Dune Encyclopedia.
Yeah. That's what I hope. Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Dune cookies.
Yeah. Mm. Especially if we can get that spice.
So, one last thing, though. If you want to write into us directly, like the listener mail that we just read out loud, you can always send us an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.